All right. Let's talk a little bit about the forgiveness and where that stands. Obviously, there's been a number of stays as to the actual implementation of this recent decision. I think just last Friday, from a Texas court saying that the whole structure of the program was unconstitutional. Notwithstanding that, we're going to kind of give you a brief overview of what Biden did, because he did more than just this forgiveness piece. And I think a lot of those additional pieces are actually really, really important for student loan borrowers. So
I guess I would add, we'll go on.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, there are extra complications when it comes to bankruptcy with this forgiveness, because when I've talked to folks at the Department of Education and U.S. attorneys, they have no idea how this forgiveness, even if it goes forward, will play out with bankruptcy cases. So let's say you have a Chapter 13 plan, right? Are they going to amend their claim to reduce it? Am I expected to object to that claim? And it's additionally complicated because the way it was set up is that if the balance was it ends up being reduced below zero because of this $10,000 or $20,000 forgiveness, but you made voluntary payments during the pandemic, then you might get a refund, which Chapter 13 plans that were paying dividends didn't stop paying during those dividends during the pandemic just because of this. So our Chapter 13 debtor is going to get a check from the Department of Treasury. I don't know. I guess that's who they always, So we always get an extra level of mess when we have bankruptcy, right? So
any federal program, yeah. PPP.
Any federal program is harder when it comes to bankruptcy.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about this and kind of at least what we knew about it when it was released and kind of.
So right now, it is based on an individual with adjusted gross income of less than $125,000 or a married couple of less than $250,000, and that's based on the lesser of the 2020 or 2021 tax returns. So you get to pick or choose between that.
But you got nothing else.
But you got nothing, and if it's a Pell Grant, you can get up to, you can get up to $20,000.
I just meant in terms of the income verification.
They're correct.
They're just going to pull the taxes?
And they don't,
historically,
on the application, they don't even want a copy of your tax returns. There's just write down what your tax, how much your AGI was. So, there are fraud concerns about that, obviously, that somebody could just write, $1 and go through, even though they made more. But, hopefully those will be caught through an audit process of these. But it's meant to be very simple. From what I understand, what I've been told by Department of Education, they anticipate that there would be 45 million Americans who would get one level of forgiveness or not, and 8 million of those would be granted automatically because the Department of Education already had their income information for 2020 or 2021 due to an income-driven repayment plan or something like that. So that adds to what happens if those, I know people who have gotten that forgiven and have been marked down to zero. I don't know, and some people who've gotten refunds. I don't know what happens if the Supreme Court ultimately agrees with the Texas court that this was unconstitutional. Is the Department of Education supposed to go try to chase that money back? I don't know what happens then. That's that implication. When it comes to taxes on a federal basis, this forgiveness is not taxable. But under state law, it might be taxable. So,
I do not think Texas was one of the taxable. There are a couple states, Wisconsin. There's no state income tax.
No state income tax. So that solves that one.
Lovely.
This was one of the earlier cases out of Indiana opposing this where the borrower was going to, was presumably going to get his entire student loan balance forgiven in the near future under the public service loan forgiveness, but this $10,000 would come and he would owe, call it $1,000 to the state of Indiana because of that, because they were one of the taxable. And so he was alleging he did have a concrete injury. And so standing, and the Department of Education adjusted it so that you could opt out. And they affirmatively said, since he objected to this, they presumed he opted out already and already unforgave him this $10,000. So that mooted that case out. You know, there's still the, I think, at least two others going forward right now.
All right. So I think we've already seen the portal has been out for about a month now, I think.
Correct, yeah.
And so that's kind of up and running. Kind of what happens at this point, we don't quite know. Probably people should continue to apply. We just don't know whether the program's actually going to carry forward. Payment hierarchy. So this is a big question, right? When you have multiple loans, what's the plan?
I have no idea. I don't know that they know either. This is one that I don't know that they know either, whether they're, because as a borrower, you obviously want the $10,000 to come off your highest interest rate loan, right? But I don't know whether they're going to prorate that, throughout all of them. I think that's something that they don't have an answer for at present.
And then lawsuits, as Ed mentioned, there was this case out of Indiana that was challenged, and so DOE has made this relief optional. You do not have to take the relief. There was also this issue with the privately held FFELP loans, and so these are loans that are actually, they're held by the banks, and there was some concern that that was going to impair their contracts, and so
those are excluded.
Those are essentially excluded.
And completely private student loans are, from all of these things, excluded, because the government outside of bankruptcy doesn't have the ability to impair those contracts.
And then, as Ed said, there are kind of special questions that come up for people in bankruptcy.